changes to the tentative agenda?
I have none.
The budget director's unable to be here, so the work session with the budget director will not be happening. Meet with department heads and elected officials. Terry Johnson, Des Moines County Auditor.
Good morning. Just want to announce that we have found a new location for Precinct Five, which used to be out at Notre Dame High School. And Rodney and I went and looked at a local church south of town. And what we might end up doing is combining two locations together into one, two different precincts into one location. So that will be coming down the pipeline. And then we still, I think, have to look for another location for another precinct. And then I heard on the radio where Burlington Community School District approved for a special election in April. So we'll be preparing for that.
Thank you. Rodney Buesner, Maintenance.
Good morning. Just trying to keep up the weather. You guys have done a great job, so appreciate all their hard work and keeping everything cleared off and everybody safe for the most part. So we're not out of the woods yet, but other than that, Johnson Controls is still at the jail working on the patrol board. And then a few minor issues here and there, but other than that, it's going pretty decent. I think they're going to be back next week, so got some other stuff going on. But other than that, nothing new to report.
Thank you, Rodney. Doug Irvine, Correctional Center.
Good morning. Population's holding right around that 82 mark. Waiting to get some people to Oakdale, depending on the weather. As Rodney stated, the control board's going good. I want to thank his staff. They're working hand in hand with Johnson Controls and getting that set up and about right on schedule.
Thank you. Kevin Glenn Denny, anything going on at the sheriff's office?
We're doing well. Some new guys in some new positions. Everybody's getting acclimated to those, but been a busy week, but everything's going well.
Thank you. Zach, land use.
Things are going good. Had a lot of zoning violations that we're following up on. We've actually got three where people have submitted a permit. Basically, somebody with getting a permit. So I've got three here we're going to process. I think we've got three or four other ones that we're waiting on, but they got some of those out there. And then we've got a subdivision that we're working through. It might be on next week's agenda, possibly, if not the following week. And then we can just send another one out for review. So that'll be coming up as well. Otherwise, just answering calls and answering questions for people.
Thanks. Ken Heidman, Coordinator of Disability Services.
Good morning. We're trying to do contracting in the SEAL region earlier. So, I mean, usually we start in April, but we've had two contract meetings so far in February, and it's probably not the best time of the year to be trying to gather a lot of people together, but going well. There's a lot more to it with regional contracting, so we're still waiting on some budgets and things like that to come through to finalize some of those contracts, but they start July 1. We're just trying to make sure that we get all the contracts done by June 30th and ready to go. So, working on it early.
Thank you. Janelle, Alvin Longquist, House of Treasurer's Office.
Good morning. Just keep them busy. The weather hasn't slowed down the motor vehicle side, that's for sure. But we continue to be busy, and I have nothing new to report.
Thank you. Colin, IT.
Keeping pretty busy, just like always, but nothing really new to report.
Okay. Lisa, I see you back there. I was thinking the county's attorney's
office. I know,
office.
It's the beauty of being short. I can hide. going really well. I want to thank Rodney and his staff and Colin and his staff for helping make our transition. We've gotten some new furniture for some that was literally falling apart. And they were great last week on very, very short notice. The trucking company didn't give us the hour that we were told we would get, and they just showed up. And so Rodney and his staff, and then Colin and his staff have been helping us kind of get everything put back together again. So I just want to say thank you very much for that. We're still continuing to search for someone to fill our two open positions. So far that's not going well, but we'll just plod on until we can get them filled. We are having a law enforcement reception next Thursday on the 21st. from 4 to 6, and I would like to invite the board to attend. It's just basically a get-to-know law enforcement, get-to-know our office. I know when I did a couple of in-service trainings last week with the Burlington Police Department, the Sheriff's Office participated. I didn't know a third of the people there, and I know that that's true of probably a lot of our office. So I just thought that would be a good chance for law enforcement in the community to get to know our staff and for us to put names with faces. Sometimes all we see is a name on a report. And unless something goes to trial, we don't ever actually get to meet that person. So again, that's next Thursday, the 21st, from 4 to 6, and I would invite all the board members to attend. In the next couple of weeks, I'm going to be meeting with law enforcement to start planning for the deferred prosecution program for school bus violations that I'd referred to in my budget meeting. We're going to start getting that back up and running now that Chris is back from his Caribbean vacation. No, he is not happy about it at all. And also, I'm going to be meeting with the CID task force commander to discuss forfeitures. They've not been, our office has not been handling forfeitures since last April, and they have quite a tidy sum of money that they would like to begin forfeiture proceedings on, so we're going to be working with them to try to get that program up and running, which eventually will bring some money back into the county, because we do get a portion of those forfeited funds. And then we're also going to be discussing maybe some joint grants for prosecution of opioid crimes. So plate is full.
Okay. Thank you, Lisa. Treasurer's office, or recorder's office. Sorry, Lisa.
That's okay. No, we're keeping busy. My part-time Renee Wellborn, she is doing a fantastic job. She is just flying through, getting all of our boat and ATV records scanned in. We have file cabinets after file cabinets of these things, thousands of them. But we, anybody needs any lateral filing cabinets, I got one that's a 5-drawer and a 4-drawer that's available at this point. And that's all.
Thanks, Lisa. Mm-hmm. Brian Carter, Secondary Roads.
Good morning. Guys ran this weekend some, and we had everybody out this morning. I think we probably road-wise got off pretty easy with what the forecast was. So seemed to help some of the gravel roads, which is nice. That's the first positive we've had for a little bit with the weather. I guess I want to remind people that are out there on the gravel roads that we had an accident yesterday where one of my motor graders was up working at a stop sign. And when you have icy conditions, a lot of times they'll stop and back up half dozen times because they're trying to rough that up and scrape it up. And we had a lady that pulled up behind and didn't back up quick enough. She laid on her horn, but you can't see behind those. You can't hear horns behind those. And so he backed into her, but he didn't even know he hit her. I mean, he didn't get all the way to the tires, so he got done and he just kept going. And there she sat, and she called law enforcement. And, you know, we accept liability, or no responsibility. I don't know that our insurance company will pay for it because we're held harmless by Iowa code, as long as we're not negligent. So I just want to point that out, that you got to give the motor graders some leeway out there if you want things improved. And you come to an intersection, and they're not just going to keep on going, because their job is to try to rough that up as best they can. And this ice has been such a struggle. We're breaking things left and right trying to deal with it. So it came up. It seems like it comes up once a year, and I wanted to mention that if you live out there, give them some, you know, stay back a ways, let them finish, make sure they're pulling away before you pull up behind them. So, because they cannot see you. Even some of our motor graders have backup cameras now. Well, if you have one in your vehicle, you know what those look like after about an hour. You can't see out of those. And so it seems like they should see you, but they don't. It's pretty much a blind spot right behind a motor grader. So.
Why don't you explain, because it always seems counterintuitive that gravel roads get slicker than hard roads, about the bed of that, the heat. Why don't you explain that in the papers here, so people appreciate a little bit more why our gravel roads are icy.
Well, this time of year, a lot of times pavement, especially when you get into this season, pavements will pick up heat, they'll hold heat. and so they won't take the ice as quick, or it'll melt before it becomes a slick situation. Gravel roads are, well, there's a foot of frost, 2 foot of frost right there from the surface down. They're always exposed. Our job is to come clear them off. So every time, snow acts like an insulator. So every time it snows, we take it off, and then it gets cold and you get more frost. And so you start pouring water on top of frost and it freezes. And it's pretty much that simple. And we've had a whole lot of rain this winter, you know, and they talk about freezing rain, but yesterday was actually, early on, was a great example. It was cold. It was freezing a little bit on windshields and such. It wasn't really freezing on the pavements, but it was freezing on the gravels. And that's because you're dropping water on a frost-covered road surface. And if there's no sun to help out with some heat, that's what it does, is it freezes. And that's just the nature of it. And if that gravel road gets calcium chloride during the summer for dust control, it's even worse, because calcium chloride attracts moisture. That's its job. In the summer, you love it because it holds down dust. In the winter, however, it becomes ice faster than anything else. So it's, I don't know, it's the nature of it. And we've had more ice this winter on gravel roads than I think you could go a long ways and add it all up. I think everybody's had that experience. So everybody's tired of it. I can confirm that. They've shared their thoughts with me. And we're tired of breaking equipment. We're down a motor grader now, as of yesterday, and we're down 3 of our picks, because when you keep grinding stuff on frozen conditions, you eventually bust welds and stuff like that. So anyway, it's been an expensive winter, but we'll keep moving and keep dealing. So
thanks, Brian.
Yep.
I want to miss you. Chris Lee, Conservation.
Not a lot to report. Most of my staff just got back from a conference, Winterfest up there in Coralville. It was really great. One of the keynote speakers was a firefighter from Charleston, South Carolina, where he was on a fire in his first year of service, and they lost 9 firefighters in this furniture store fire. And it was just a really good eye-opener of how it's really easy to get complacent with your job, and so it was just really good training, and a lot of really good stuff we're going to bring back, and I don't see Angie in the room, but it goes a lot towards a lot of the stuff that she talks about with safety and training and the law enforcement guys. Just reminds me once again just how absolutely important they are, and makes us really appreciate the people that serve this community. So other than that, we checked the ice conditions on Big Hollow Lake yesterday. We got about 7 inches, but it's very, very cloudy. And so just be careful out there. I mean, 7 inches is all right to go on, but like I said, that can be very unpredictable. We do have some springs under that lake. I know a lot of the ponds are froze over, and I'm seeing a lot of people out ice fishing. But with this, you know, rain and then snow and then freezing and then thawing and rain and stuff, ice conditions are just going to be weird. So if you plan on going out on the ice, just please, please be careful.
Thanks for that. We can't miss anybody.
I don't think so.
Do you have anything, Bob?
No.
Correspondence. Do you have any correspondence? I have gotten a couple emails and a couple comments with thanks for the job that the road crew's doing on the ice and trying to keep the county roads passable in spite of the problems that they're encountering. Proceed to discussion and vote. We have a CIT, Crisis Intervention Training, presentation.
What's up here?
Sure, just step up to the...
Well, I kind of talked to... So I work with the SEAL region, it's the 8th county region here in southeast Iowa.
Would you introduce yourself for the record?
My name is Alan Brady. I'm the Crisis Intervention Team Coordinator for the region. I also do jail diversion, but I'm here to talk about crisis intervention. So... we put on a 40-hour training every 6 months. It's going to be now. Our first training was in October that the region put on, and we train law enforcement officers. This training, crisis intervention for more detail, is training officers to interact and recognize symptoms that people are living with mental illness. It helps officers recognize it better and to handle them in a better manner so that use of force is never used and people are getting the help that they need. Like I said, we had our first training in October where we trained 15 officers within the region. We're working on towards getting as many officers trained as possible. I have a couple officers that have been through several CIT trainings. I myself have been through St. Louis CIT training and San Antonio CIT training. Put on our training here, and so we're moving forward with it.
Can I interrupt just a second?
Yeah, sure. Yes.
When he speaks about regions, he's talking about the Southeast Iowa Link. That's the mental health region that Des Moines County belongs to. That includes Des Moines County, Lee County, Henry County, Washington County, Van Buren County, Keokuk County, Owyza County. Did I miss anybody?
I can never rattle them all off.
I think there were. there's eight of them. I'm sorry. But anyway, that's the region where
And the crisis intervention training, we put it on for the entire region. This training coming up in April, and the training is April 8th through the 12th, and that'll be held in Mount Pleasant at the Emergency Management Building. This training, we will be accepting law enforcement officers, first responders, emergency medical staff, and jail staff, all to be trained in CIT. So we have a continuum of crisis intervention to any response. I know that my officers that have implemented in the field have seen a great change in how they identify and how they interact with people on the street. And we during our 40-hour training, I'm going to kind of skip all over the place, but during our 40-hour training, we do role plays, and we actually have people come in that act out these scenarios, showing symptoms of different mental illnesses, and to give officers practice in handling this on the street. And I'll let you want to speak on that.
Why don't you introduce your officers?
This is Sergeant Chazon, and I don't know your official title.
Detective Derek Schwamp of Rowland Police Department.
So, and they've both been CIT trained, and have used it in the field. I've gotten plenty of reports, so.
The way I understand it, not just for mental illness, it also teaches you how to deal with autism or
yes.
intellectual disabilities, that sort of thing.
So the anybody that's in crisis, really.
Okay.
That's going through a crisis. We have very little mental health training in the academy. And so as a result of the community-based services that now are being offered to people that have mental illnesses that are being institutionalized, we're dealing with them a lot more. And part of the biggest part of our training is de-escalation. To de-escalate the situation, calm the person down, figure out what services they need, whether they need to go to the hospital at that point or whether they just need to be referred to an outpatient service. And finding them the help they need. That is the gist of crisis intervention training. I mean,
Detective Schwan actually used it on individual or individuals?
Yes.
How's it work?
It works very well. In fact, we've started using it. I mean, the training that you get, you actually use on other calls as well. I mean, any domestic call or whatever, you kind of do the same thing, But the role playing, if you haven't had a lot of mental health training or had a lot of interaction with people that have a mental illness or are autistic or basically just having a bad day, this teaches you how to communicate with them to calm them down so that most people that are in a crisis don't listen real well or understand what you're saying. And so the whole idea is calming them down to reach a common goal to get them the help they need. Where we're going with this, or where we would like to go with this, is to not just have officers that are mentally are trained in CIT, but actually have a response team. Where I guess the best example I can give you is we had a Burlington officer that had CIT training. The entire squad got sent up to a gentleman's house that is a veteran. He suffers from post-traumatic stress disorder, and he was threatening to harm himself. He had armed himself when we were there, and for an hour and a half, a conversation went on with this gentleman to try and convince him to go to the hospital. It tied up our resources so that other calls for service that were coming in took a back seat to this. the idea is to have a response team, hopefully in the near future, where somebody can be called in along with a mental health professional and respond to that scene and take it over so that the law enforcement officers that are working their regular patrol shifts can go and handle their regular calls for service.
I've when it was explained to me, I've heard that that training can cut down on hands on arrests. In other words, having to actually grab a hold of somebody by a huge percentage.
That's right.
Well, I have the officers that have been CIT trained, when they implement it in the field, they send me a report establishing, you know, what the call was and how they interacted with it, different behaviors of substance use that was interacted in the call. And I've had over 40 reports now back to me, and I've only had maybe one use of force in those reports. So, and there was no extreme use of force at all either. It was just kind of had to go hands-on to get them to the help they
needed. The old way before CIT was, once you determined that the person needed to go to the hospital, it was no longer an option. They weren't given an option. We're going to the hospital, and if they didn't want to go, you physically took them to the hospital. Now it's more of taking the time to talk to them and explain to them and get them to understand that you have a job to do and this has to happen, but you convince them to go with you rather than forcefully taking them. That's how it usually occurs.
I took a ride along one Friday night with one of your CIT trained officers, and that's exactly what happened later in the evening. There was a gentleman that he wasn't going to go. He was unhappy. He was a combination of homicidal and suicidal. And anyway, so the officer spoke to him a little while, and he ended up taking him to the hospital. He was all calmed down, so that could have turned out not quite so.
And just so you know, we started keeping track of this, sending these reports in August?
July, late July.
So for 2018, we did almost 40 CIT response calls from July to December. Huh. And for 2019, I sent you two this morning, and we're up to 13 for the year.
So, one for
being used a lot.
So we're implementing it more. We're seeing officers, any officers, whether they're tenured or starting on the street, any officers that have been implementing this have seen better results in how they interact with people. And I do want to say crisis intervention isn't just something that the region's come up with. Crisis intervention started in 1987 in Memphis, or not 19, so 1988 in Memphis, Tennessee, due to a bad response to a mental illness call. And so it started from there, and there are states all over the United States that are taking it, and so we're on the forefront on some of the CIT changes in Iowa, as well as Burlington's wanting to put in CIT team specifically, a special unit for it, whereas the rest of the region, we're working on implementing mobile crisis, which will be a team that will be available to the entire region to respond to calls that deal with mental health or some sort of mental illness.
Okay. Kevin, I believe that Des Moines County's got some CIT-trained deputies, don't they?
We do, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and we'll continue to send guys through.
Okay, that's
The nice thing, I think, too, is we've been working on jail diversion. When a person gets into the jail, of screening and trying to find out if they have a mental health need, but now this is going before they even get into jail. We're trying to help them at this point. So it's another step in.
And that has happened in Burlington. We've had opportunities where we would normally have arrested somebody that was being a nuisance or trespassing or whatever, and the officer that responds recognizes that the person's suffering from a mental illness is in crisis. And so instead of taking them to the jail, they're going to the hospital or
being referred out to somewhere else. Yeah.
A lot of these would just be minor misdemeanor kind of crime. They're not really major crimes. They're just people with mental health needs that need treatment. So.
I think the whole region's excited about this, the potential for.
And our last CIT training we had in October, like I said, we trained 15 officers. We're already set to have more into our classes next time around. Our next class, if you want to observe, I don't have any business cards on me today, but you can get a hold of me. My name is Alan Brady. I work for the SEAL region. I've
been
communication
to the one in Iowa
City. Ken has my information. Yeah. There's pamphlets. If you find a SEAL region pamphlet, my name's in there as well. He's working on digging through his pamphlets.
Pamphlet.
There you go.
I think that.
One thing I do want to point out with crisis intervention that's very important to me, we're trying to change the stigma when it comes to mental illness. Nobody asks to be diagnosed with mental illness. Nobody asked to have it. People do suffer from it, and people live with it every day. So we're trying to change the stigma on that, because when you think of somebody that has gotten cancer, you know, you think of hope and survival and fighter and stuff like that, whereas people, you know, they back away from somebody that's suffering from mental illness when both of these people have basically a disease and they just need help with treatment. And so we're trying to change that stigma as well.
How hard is it if you get called out someplace to ascertain that this individual is not just causing trouble, you know, just whatever, and actually has a problem of some sort, whether, you know, autistic or a mental illness or something like that? Is that?
Well, usually, sir, it's very quick. Within a couple minutes of a conversation with somebody, you can ascertain whether or not it's a mental illness or if it's somebody that's obviously committing a crime. When we go through the training and we do the scenarios, it helps us understand of how they would act. During the 40-hour training course, they go through all the different mental illnesses and what people would do and how they'd act and what they would say. So you can identify fairly quickly what the situation is that this person is going through. So I would say within a couple of minutes of speaking to somebody, you can pretty well ascertain if it's a mental illness or if there's some other issue going on.
Okay. Where it becomes more difficult is if they suffer from mental illness and they're also using illegal drugs. When they're both as the combination, sometimes it's harder.
Self-medication.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it used to be where the hospital wouldn't treat that. We would take them out there, and if they admitted that they'd used methamphetamine or whatever, the hospital wouldn't look at it. They didn't deal with dual diagnosis, you know, substance abuse or mental illness. They've gotten better about that now, where they're detoxing these people and then determining whether or not the person is still a harm to themselves or not, or to somebody else.
Okay. That's probably partially that behavior, that BHAT team.
That's
behavior,
exactly right.
Assessment
team. Yeah. And then I also do want to, our crisis intervention training, we bring in both professionals and officers from the street to give both experiences. This time around, we will be having, for the autism piece, we will be having an ambassador coming out of St. Louis, who is actually on the autism spectrum himself. He's a great presenter, he's a great leader, as well as bring in pieces for officer wellness as well, because the job that they do is pretty harsh on their daily lives. So we bring in officer wellness to make sure that they're supported as well through everything. That's going to be by the Peer Support Foundation of Iowa, as well as we use Burlington resources actually to have people from Great River, doctors and such, to come in and speak about their specialty. Then we back that up with officer experience so the officers know what's going on in the field. It's a great training.
Yeah,
it really is.
I truly am excited about it.
Yep. And like I said, if you want to observe, there are different ways to get a hold of mine. Anybody in the SEAL region of transition link knows who I am. They'll get you to me one way or another. So
you might want to give the press a card here before you leave, so if they have any questions, they can give you
a
call.
Yeah, I can give my email and stuff.
Okay, that'd be fine.
Yeah.
That'd be great. That'd
sure.
be great. We really appreciate your coming. We're excited about this. Thanks for doing this. Good luck.
Thanks
again.
I braved the weather, so I'm super excited.
Yeah,
about
yeah.
So.
Yeah.
It's a nice step forward on that bill.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you.
Thank you, Detective. Thank you, Sergeant.
Thanks.
Here we have payroll claims reimbursement.
Perfect. Thank you.
Payroll claims reimbursement, $1,216.49. And
non-cash taxable reimbursements at $45 even.
Move to approve.
Second. Terry?
Bob Beck?
Yes.
Tom Brokaw?
Yes.
We have a certificate of organization for the Des Moines County Agricultural Extension Council. Terms beginning 2017, expiring 2020, we have Aaron Kling, Jennifer Lane, John Dockendorf, Patty Jo Patton. Terms beginning 2019 and expiring December 2022, Barbara Kerr, Brenda Wishmeyer, Dwight Byerly, Dean Van Ness, and Brian DeWald.
Move to approve.
Second. Terry?
Bob Beck?
Yes.
Tom Brokaw?
Yes.
We have a resolution for interfund transfer. Whereas it is desired to authorize the county auditor to transfer from the emergency equipment fund to the general basic fund $64,072.24 that were deposited in the emergency equipment fund from vehicles and fixed assets sold on govdeals.com starting on January 2nd, 2015. Now therefore be it resolved that the Board of Supervisors of Des Moines County, Iowa, on the 12th day of February 2019, deem it necessary to authorize the county auditor to transfer $64,072.24 from the emergency equipment fund to the general basic fund.
Move to approve.
Second. Terry?
Bob Beck?
Yes.
Tom Brokaw?
Yes.
We have engineer's report, which would be you, Brian, on the results of the bid results for the Sperry Road Bridge.
Yeah, we bid this bridge in January with DOT that bid the bridge. So, on our behalf, got three bids. Low bidder was Brandt Construction at the $514,000 and change. Had three good competitive bids. Low bidder, never worked with, but
are they out of Rock Island or?
I believe so. I'm not familiar with them. So anyway, engineer's estimate was ballpark around $600,000, somewhere in there. So obviously, pretty good competitive bids, and I wanted to give you that report, and that kind of rolls right into the next item.
We have a resolution approval of contract documents.
I mentioned to you, we had a work session.
This is the same bridge, right?
Yes, same bridge. We had that work session a couple weeks ago.
Yep.
How they've changed the process. Mm-hmm. This is what we came up with. It's a resolution, and essentially you're approving me to handle the electronic signature on the board's behalf for the electronic contract signatures, which is different than it used to be. Obviously, we used to run four copies of everything through you guys, so I'll have to get you a copy once it's all done. They also changed and I didn't understand this before that work session, they changed the process. It used to be the contractor signed, and then it came to the county. They flipped that, so now you guys will sign, then we send it on to the contractor electronically, and they sign. So I'll get you a copy. I don't have anything for you right now, but you will have one. So. We're learning our way through it. I'm sure once we've gone through this once, we'll have a far better idea. This is our first time.
Okay. So, be resolved by the Board of Supervisors of Des Moines County, Iowa, that the contract for the Sperry Road Bridge Project is hereby approved, and the county engineer is authorized to digitally approve the contract and other related bid documents on behalf of the Board of Supervisors.
Move to approve.
Second. Terry?
Bob Beck?
Yes.
Tom Brokaw?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. We have a personnel action from the auditor's office. Ari Kramer, clerk 2, full-time. Excuse
promotion from part-time to full-time clerk, six-month probation. Previous rate was $12 an hour. The new rate is $25,787.96 a year.
Move to approve.
Second. Terry?
Bob Beck?
Yes.
Tom Brooker?
Yes. We have reports. We have reports. We have the General Assistance Report for January 2019. The Clerks of Courts Report of Fees Collected for January 2019. And the Veterans Affairs Report for January of 2019. These reports will be on file in the Auditor's Office and available for public review. Minutes for the regular meeting of February 5th, 2019.
Move to approve.
Second. Terry?
Bob Beck?
Yes.
Tom Brooker?
Yes. Is there any other business?
I have none.
Future agenda items. I have none.
I have none.
Committee reports.
You know, you attended the UMRA meeting when I wasn't able to get there.
Yeah, it was quite an unusual. River issues, but didn't say when they were going to fix the rivers.
Talked over with the Corps engineers.
Everybody knows the need, but nobody's got a solution. Well, Congress is supposed to have the solution. They pass the rules, and then they don't fund it. So that's all I have.
Okay. I have none. Public input. If anyone from the public would like to address the board, please stand up, give your name and address for the record. If you would care to, you can step to the lectern, but that's not required. And please hold your comments to 2 minutes. Any public comment?
Morning, my name is Ashley Sherwood. Address 3120 Oakland Dells Drive, Burlington, Iowa. I'm here today to show my support for the employees of Des Moines County. It is my understanding that this board's intention is to strip the current Des Moines County contract, and after 40 years of negotiating fairly and being reasonable, you wish to go to a handbook policy. A handbook policy that will essentially strip your employees of not only their benefits and their job security, but their voice as well. This handbook policy effectively turns all Des Moines County employees into right-to-work employees and offers their job positions no security. After all, this gives the board complete control to change the policy at any time they wish or when a policy no longer suits them. So I ask, what assurances are you offering your employees that the policy they are agreeing to today won't be changed tomorrow? I might take a moment to respectfully remind the board today that it is irresponsible of an employer to shed their responsibilities to their employees, responsibilities such as providing reasonable health benefits, good pension coverage, reasonable working hours, and job safety protections. The employees of this county work hard, are faithful, they do the best they can for the county that they love. These are employees who value their jobs and the security their positions provide for them and their families. Now, if you value these hardworking men and women of this county as you say you do, why are you no longer willing to work with them? Nowhere in Chapter 20 does it state that you must remove the permissive language of the contract, and you are given the option to leave it. In fact, there have been other cities and counties in the state of Iowa who have done exactly that. So I ask you, are you doing this just because you simply can? You were elected to your positions on this board by the constituents of this county, but I might remind you that your county employees are also your constituents. They're residents in this county. They shop and pay taxes here. Their children go to school here. They're raising their families here. Your job is to serve this county and its people well, and going to a handbook policy does not accomplish that or benefit anyone. It does not benefit the public, and it does not benefit the employees of this county. In closing, I wish to point out that you are risking lowering worker morale and losing faithful, trustworthy employees who serve the public of this county well, and I would ask that you reconsider your stance on implementing a handbook policy. Thank you.
Thank you, Ashman. Any other public comment?
Ryan Drew, 12688 Flint Bottom Road, Burlington, Iowa. Just wanted to speak a couple things. First, since I'm here and it's on the agenda, the bridge project, I will point out to the Board of Supervisors those words swap in the middle of that contract document. That's the impacts of legislation that was passed 2 years ago. So as I go out this afternoon to our career fair and talk to the men and women that we're trying to teach skilled trades to, I'm going to explain why this in our community is being perpetuated, that projects no longer have wage protections or American Steel or the oversight by the federal government of auditing that that project was done. So I feel that's very detrimental to the local community, and sometimes consequences in the legislature takes a while to show up, and here we are. So onto the real subject I'm here speaking today, on the asking for the board's support to maintain the contract that's in place. I know at the last, was it last week's, but the previous meeting, I asked a couple questions, asking for the supervisor's response on whose proposal this was. Too many times we find this is outside the city influence from law firms that are hired. And then also would like the taxpayers to know just exactly what this cost to implement. Obviously, if we're having an attorney work on that to switch this to a handbook, there's an expense, financial expense. And I think the taxpayers of the community deserve to know what that is when we're not giving it to our employees, but yet we're sending it outside of our city to legal counsel. Again, I spoke today and tomorrow. We're going to be bringing in youth from Mount Pleasant, Keokuk, Burlington to talk about careers. I went to Lee County Economic Development, their forum last week, and the big emphasis is how do we keep good kids in our community? What is going to make them want to stay in our community and raise a family, right? Low taxes depend on people wanting to stay in this community and not continuing the plight to move to the Quad Cities, Des Moines, Iowa City. What kind of message are we sending? These are good careers. You're not going to get rich by them, but they're good careers in our community. And the one thing we ask out of that is a little stability in the contract. They have a different boss every 4 years when a new board comes in. And the one stability they rely on is a contract with working rules in place. What kind of message, again? These consequences, just like that federal legislation or the state legislation on the swap, took 2 years to start showing up in our community. How long will the detrimental actions, if we switch to a handbook, take to trickle down into our community? I think in this case, it'd be sooner than what you might imagine. If the board is intent on going to a handbook, I would ask them, I think it's important. Obviously, you're the voice, the faces of the taxpayers. I think we have a public hearing. See what kind of support. If you're doing the business of the community and the taxpayers of this county, I think something as dramatic as this is erasing 40 years of history ought to be able to have public input into that. Last but not least, you know, come to several of these meetings and hear about the problems, the crisis team that's in place. We've got a lot of problems in our community that we can spend our time and resources trying to fix. Why are we trying to create another one? So thank you for your time, and I hope you maintain the contract.
Thank you, Ryan. Is there any other public input?
Hi, Tom Portney, 2609 Clearview here in Burlington. I'd like to give you a little history, but you, both of you supervisors and maybe some others in this room, the reason this came to pass is because Governor Bested's first endless terms of office, he was defeated two or three times in lawsuits with AFSCME. And he always said, if I ever get a chance, AFSCME's going to suffer. Then he got reelected, he came back in, and he went along okay, and then in 2016, he got full control of the legislature. He said, okay, now's the time. That's why this all came about. That's why he went to the legislature, said, move this legislation, and let's kill AFSCME, and that's what they're trying to do. Burlington School District did this in 2016, prior to me getting on the board. I've been trying to change that, and so far I'm not. That's probably the main reason I'm on that board, as a matter of fact. And I've been trying to change that, and it's not worked yet. Now, you folks are doing the same thing with the county. I do not understand it. You're fixing something that's not broke, and I just don't get it. You still have to negotiate wages, and I don't understand why you want to throw away the contract and have a phony handbook that has no weight. The next time there's a bridge bid put out, I would ask your roads man here, Mr. Carter, if he would just go to the bridge folks and say, can we get a handbook to tell us the agreement here, because we don't need a contract anymore. It's senseless. Contracts are there for a reason. Tom and Bob, they're there for a reason. I would implore you to go back and take a look at this. See, what do you have to gain? What do you have to gain? What do the taxpayers of this county have to gain? It's wrong, and you know it's wrong. You both know it's wrong. Please, please, take another look at this thing. Thank you.
Thank you, Tom.
Any other public comment? There's no further public comment. With an aye, we're adjourned.
Aye.
Aye, we are adjourned.